And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. David, these 10 days, April 9th through the 19th or through the 18th, are, as you've pointed out to me more than once, very significant days in American history in terms of events that are that highlight significant problems that Americans have dealt with or tried to cope with over the years and we're still coping with, whether it's the Appomattox defeat of April 9th, the defeat of the Confederacy, or Lincoln's assassination on the 15th, FDR's death on April the 12th, Paul Revere's ride on April the 18th, all of these things that highlight issues in the American experience that we have not yet resolved, not yet fundamentally taken steps forward on, right?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, we look at our founding, we have Paul Revere's ride on the 18th, which is coming up next Saturday, that resulted in the next day of the shot heard around the world. And, of course, the Revolutionary War was the concept of what kind of government should we have, the battle for the establishment of a democratic republic versus a kingdom, a tyrannical kingdom, and also the subsequent role of the states versus the central government,
and reflected today in the right wing led by the Koch brothers, who do not believe that there should be democracy because they don't think that if people are left to rule themselves that they'll make the right choice. Therefore, don't let them rule. Right. That's the issue today. On that, it's a real issue.
Yeah, I think I've quoted one of the Randolphs before saying he loves freedom, but he says, I'm an aristocrat. I love freedom, but I hate democracy or something along those lines.
Right. Freedom for himself.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. Of course. The freedom is the freedom to rule over other people.
Right.
The power situation.
Right.
And then, of course, we had the Civil War. You mentioned Appomattox, but Fort Sumter was fired on April 13th. It was almost 4 years to the day between the first shot and what was considered the last shot, although it wasn't quite the last shot of the Civil War, which was also fought over the ideals of government. You go back to what Lincoln said at Gettysburg, whether a nation so dedicated by and for the people, using those words, would long endure. And of course, Lincoln then gets shot on the 14th and dies on the 15th. There's a shot that changed the course of American history terribly. John Wilkes Booth never realized that the best thing for the South would have been Abraham Lincoln rather than what then was known as the Radical Republicans. Lincoln was a more forgiving type of personality. And,
the whole issue of the Civil War was, are African Americans, and by extension, everybody who's not of white European descent, are they human?
Well, yeah. There was that question, and also the political power of I'm writing an article now. Our Law Day this year coming up in the beginning of May is centered around women's suffrage. And, the basic premise when we started in these colonies was if you're a white male Christian property owner, you had rights. Everybody else had a struggle against them. Don't forget, it took women 50 years after the passage of the 15th Amendment to gain the right to vote. We'll be talking more about that later on. But I want to get back to the
historical. Or the right to hold property. Or the right to appear in court. Or just to be citizens. They were not citizens.
They weren't full citizens. No. They were looked as just extensions of their husbands or the men that they had. to inherit and things like that. And then we had on April 12th, something that you probably do remember, it was before my time, was the death of Franklin Roosevelt in 1945.
I do remember.
You know, we're talking 75 years on that. And, you know, Roosevelt actually fought two wars. You know, Donald Trump today says he's a wartime president over this coronavirus, but FDR was a warrior against the economic collapse of the United States, as well as the leader of the free world in fighting fascism. So he had both of those wars, and we still have those issues. We've had
except that we have the leader of fascism now as the president. Got you on that one.
Yeah. But
well, I'm telling you, these are the issues.
Fascism.
Fascism has many varieties. People think of fascism; they think of the extermination camps of the Nazis. Mussolini didn't have extermination camps. Franco didn't have extermination camps. Hungarians, Horthy didn't have extermination camps. They were all fascists. The Axis powers, the Japanese militarists, they were fascists. They didn't have extermination camps.
They had mass exterminations. They go to China and the rape of Shanghai.
These are all bloodthirsty people. I mean, after all, the Italians did what they could to exterminate the Ethiopians, right? Absolutely. I'm not making any case for these people. I'm just saying fascism takes many varieties. You don't require genocide to have fascism. Fascism lends itself to genocide, but it doesn't require genocide. Yeah.
It allows it to occur.
And if you think it requires genocide, and you're not open to the real danger of fascism, because after all, the guy isn't proposing to shuffle a bunch of people into the oven. But before you get to the oven, there's a lot of horrible things that you endure before that.
Well, look what's happened on our border last year and the last couple of years.
Exactly. That's exactly true. You're right.
Yeah. Anyway. These things keep recurring, and these themes keep recurring, and we keep seeing these today in current events. We talk about the right to vote. We mentioned on that the Civil War extending it to what have been slaves, black people, and I mentioned the suffragettes, but we had the debacle in Wisconsin this week. We still don't know the results of the election, but
you can raise the question, do people have the right to vote in much of the country today? The Republican Party is engaged and has been engaged in a long campaign for voter suppression. You can't register. If you're registered, you can't vote. If you're a student, you can't vote. If you're a minority, you can't vote. And then they close all the polling places, even if you have the right to vote, but there's no place to vote, right?
Well, yeah. Don't forget, originally, down south, these were the Democrats, the Jim Crow South.
Joined the Republican Party.
I just said they just switched parties after 1964. There's an infamous quote, and you can actually get it on the Internet. You can hear it. Tom Hartman plays it all the time, of Paul Weyrich, who is a conservative, evangelical, Republican strategist. He was one of the founders, I think, it was the Heritage Foundation. And he talks about, he calls them the goo-goos, the good government types. He said, who want people to vote. And he says, we don't want people to vote. When people vote, we lose, meaning
Republicans.
That goes back into the 70s. And as you said,
didn't Grover Norquist say the same thing in Pennsylvania at one point in a speech? He said exactly the same thing.
He may have, of course.
And Donald Trump said pretty much the same thing last week. He said, if we have voting by mail, opening it up to everybody, no Republican will ever get elected.
Get elected again. And that, of course, that got echoed down in Georgia by the head of their assembly. The Republicans, they've had, they're deathly afraid of the ordinary people coming out in mass and exercising the franchise. Remember, we talk about the right to vote.
But they don't hide it. They're open about it. Especially the Koch brothers are open about it.
Well, they've become much more. Yeah, well, that was part of Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean, saying
right.
we our ideas don't sell. Don't forget, we've, you know, in the last 20 years, we've had two people elected president who lost who did not gain the majority of vote, lost the popular vote.
Right.
And they've extended their rule by appointing four people to the Supreme Court that make up the majority there. And of course, the Supreme Court came down in Wisconsin this week and said that you when the governor said he wanted to postpone the election, the Wisconsin legislature said no. And then the Supreme Court said he can't do it. They tried to throw a little sop out there saying, well, we'll allow people from the day after our decision here to have to postmark their absentee ballots. And as the dissent pointed out, people haven't even gotten their absentee ballots yet. How are they going to mail them back? Reality just doesn't exist for these folks. It's only pure political power.
But that is reality. That is reality. Yeah. And if the Democrats don't wake up to that and don't fight it the same way, they will never win an election.
Yeah, some of the Never Trumpers have been pointing this out, that the parties really are different in their mindset. And the Republicans are all about winning at any and winning at any cost. The Democrats talk about their ideas and their policies and things like that. And more often, or as often than not, they lose because of that. That was one of the, you know, the great failings of Barack Obama. He got elected and he got took in huge majorities in the House and the Senate. And, you know, he sort of said to these people, "For you know, we've got it now, folks. Don't worry about it." Fired Howard Dean, or didn't rehire Howard Dean, who had set up the 50-state strategy, and then everything fell apart within 2 years. We had the Tea Party and what have you. You have to continue to, when you have these folks down, you have to keep them down. I'm referring to those who are anti-majoritarian and will do harm to you. You really, really have to keep at it. And, you know, we're going to see what happens. You know, the ironic thing about Donald Trump saying you can't trust the vote, the absentee ballot vote, is that he voted himself by absentee ballot.
Well, he doesn't count. He doesn't count.
He doesn't count. Well, yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly.
Do as I say,
exactly.
Not as I do. And of course, state after state after state, you know, Oregon, and I don't know, I think there's nine other states or eight other states have complete absentee voting. Now, there are problems with that, mainly that if you vote too early, you may want to change your mind. We saw some of that in the Democratic primaries this year when there was a lot of early voting, and then most of the candidates fell out. You know, by the time we got to Super Tuesday, there were only, four or five candidates left. And going beyond that, I mean, look at Arizona. After there was only Bernie and Biden left, Arizona, Bloomberg still got 10% of the vote. And I think Buttigieg got 9% of the vote. Or Elizabeth Warren got 9% of the vote. They weren't even in it anymore. So, but there are ways to deal with that. We really have to get people not only registered, but we have to motivate them to vote. There was a poll this week that came out. And it had Joe Biden up by 11 points, 53-42. But when you looked at the internals of the poll, it showed that 80% of the Republicans said they're highly motivated to vote, and only 50% of the Democrats. And that, you know, that takes us into what happens going forth, because buried in all the things that are going on this week was the fact that Bernie Sanders withdrew from his campaign. And there are two big questions that are left there. Is one, how can Biden bring in the Bernie vote to his campaign? Part of that's going to, I think, depend on who he picks for vice president. And he's talked about his adopting some of what Bernie wanted. And I think that was some backroom dealing there. We're just going to have to see. And how do you deal with people who have, for the last 6 years or so, have poured their heart into Bernie's campaign? You know, he says we've lost the vote, but we've won the ideological war. And how do you get the ideologues, the purists, who turned on Hillary or decided to go third party or not vote at all, how do you make sure that they vote against Trump this time around? So there's a lot of things out there.
Well, you see,
that's
the problem that Biden has, because Biden and the people around Biden look at the problem as, how do you get rid of Trump? Whereas the people around Bernie and the people that you've just called the Bernie hardcore, they want to get rid of Trump because they want to install something else, a whole different approach to the problems of the country.
Right.
Getting rid of Trump is part of that, but that's not all of it. But for the Biden people, that's all of it.
Right. It's necessary, but it's not
sufficient. Right. That's exactly right. But it is sufficient for the Biden folks. So, for example, here you have the coronavirus situation where people who are covered by private health insurance are thrown out of work and lose their private health insurance, right? We've had now 18 million people thrown out of work in the last 4 weeks, all of whom, or most of whom, were covered by private health insurance. Now they don't have this private health insurance.
Right.
And yet Biden says if you pass a Medicare for All bill, he would veto it. The farthest he will go is he would lower Medicare's eligibility to 60 instead of 67. That doesn't cut the mustard for most people.
It's slightly different. You're absolutely right that he would now make it mandatory, like Medicare. Is Medicare 67 now? I thought it was still 65.
It's 65, but the benefits don't come due until 67. Eligible for it at 65. You sign up for it at 65, but then you have to wait before you get anything.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a way of delaying the actual eligibility, but not saying that's what you did.
Well, Biden says now you're going to be able to sign up at 60. But he's always said that in lieu of making it Medicare for all and mandatory for all, basically compulsory insurance, that anyone who wants it, that would be below 67 or 65 or even now 60, could sign up for it. So it becomes mandatory at 60, but it becomes voluntary below 60. So it is more comprehensive than just that. When this thing shakes out, you could be right that people are going to say, hey, we just can't put up with this. The private sector just doesn't work, and we should adopt the Medicare for all.
Yeah, you have a real problem. Capitalism in the world is at a state of collapse. Look at the gas industry. It's gas companies, and that's the engine of the world, right? Power. The gas extraction industries are They're in a state of collapse. They cannot sustain themselves. They can only live if working people's taxes undergirds their profits. Otherwise, they all go out of business. Gas is oil is now at what, $22 a barrel? And of course, you can't be profitable at less than $40 a barrel.
Yeah, it's been, it depends where you are, but it's been fluctuating down in between 20, 22, 23, 25, down in that area.
And natural gas is under $2 a barrel, $2 a million BTUs, and you need four to break even. There's not a single natural gas driller that is solvent. I mean, it's all a Ponzi scheme.
Well, you look at, I call it the extraction industry dilemma. We've had under the pro-coal, pro-carbon president here, the largest amount of bankruptcies in the coal industry. All those companies, or most of the big ones, have declared bankruptcy. And they've left the taxpayer holding the bag for cleanup and for pensions and things like that. We've now had, there was an article this week we were talking about before we went on the air, the New York Times explaining the extraction industry for with fracking, with gas and oil, and how they've really, they're really, it's a Wall Street play based upon getting investment, but the product is only profitable in the first couple of times it comes out of the ground, and then
the first
year, and then after that it becomes unprofitable, and they have to keep drilling for more oil to keep this thing going, or fracking for more oil, and the same thing with gas. But the problem is we still do need energy, and our energy producers are still dependent on fossil fuels. Now, about if you listen to Tom Friedman, he says about 21% of energy now in America is renewables. It's solar and it's wind power and I guess hydroelectric power and some nuclear power in there. But, you know, it takes time to convert.
You don't want to convert. You have to have a plan to convert. The current plan is not to convert. And yet, everybody who studied this knows that the coronavirus epidemic is nothing compared to the climate crisis epidemic that's 10 years or 15 years down the line. Right. Nothing. If you can't handle a virus, how are you going to handle the ocean? How are you going to handle the storms? You're not going to. And that's what's facing you. And the fossil fuel industry is accelerating it.
Well, you have that. You know, it's kind of interesting. There was a show this weekend. It's on Book TV. A George Washington University professor by the name of David Michaels wrote a book. He's written previous books on this called The Triumph of Doubt. And it's about how all these industries translate into what's supposedly called capitalism, have gone on and have captured the science and captured the regulators. I mean, people can get it on their computers by just going on Book TV or C-SPAN 2 and looking that up. And it went from the sugar industry in the 40s to more prominently the tobacco industry in the 50s, also the asbestos industry. And now it's with the Koch brothers financing, it's in the energy sector where they produce phony science to create doubt that prohibits the government from putting in policies that will change things, because a lot of this you need government investment for infrastructure to do these things. The grid, for instance, the electric grid and whatever you have. We've had big investments in government power projects in the past. You know, we had the TVA with FDR. We had the Hoover Dam. You know, Grand Coulee Dam, we're all government. We had the
don't forget the Manhattan Project.
The Manhattan Project, of course, that was nuclear power.
That created nuclear power. That's right.
That created nuclear power, and we had the Rural Electrification Agency, which created a demand for the power. Previously, you had the companies didn't want to invest in extending the lines in places like Texas, where it would cost a lot of money to hook up to somebody who's 30 miles out of town, and they wouldn't recoup their investment. But it made a big difference for these people, and allowed, like all these things, allowed for development. You know, the Erie Canal was the first big investment by government. It was the state of New York to quote unquote open the West. It ran from the Hudson River to Lake Erie, but all those towns developed. You had great economic development, and now we have economic shrinkage. Right now, we have all these industries closing down, and people out of work. And you know, the Republicans still are stuck with this idea that government, as Ronald Reagan said, is not the solution; it's the problem. And what they're afraid of is when people see that government is the only solution left out there because of the failures or the inability of private enterprise to fully address this. Now, private enterprise is part of the solution, but in fact, they're going to need government help, huge government help.
Well, look at
when
the
they see what the government can do. This undercuts this libertarian Ayn Rand Koch brothers philosophy that's taken hold over the last 50 or so years.
It only undercuts it if people who realize that it undercuts it make the point to everybody else that it undercuts it. Otherwise, nobody's going to see it. There's a role for people to play. It doesn't just happen by itself.
Communicating.
Yep.
Communicating, and that's a key. And again, that's something.
Organizing.
Yeah, you keep emphasizing organizing, but and they go hand in hand because you've got to communicate to people in order to get them enthused enough to join your organization and to be able to see what an organization can do for their rights. And right now, we're talking very basic rights. You know, in the for the first part of the 20th century, we talked about workers' rights on salary and working conditions. Now we're just talking about being able to live, public health type of things, whether it's pollution or it's viruses or what have you. You do need, to some extent, a central figure who is going to come out and be able to articulate it. Bernie was able to do that very well and motivate his people, but he only got up to, 35%. Teddy Roosevelt was able to do it very well. We talk about the progressive movement of, we were talking beforehand.
Bernie, I think, got up to 42%.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But it's still, he's still shy of the majority there. And, you know, for these ideas, really, you should be way up a lot higher than the simple majority because it's life and death issues. You had the William Jennings.
That's true. It's life and death issues. But there you could, you know, and I know that people don't always vote their interests, that people often vote for what they're convinced to vote for, which could be against their interests.
Yes.
People who vote for Trump, most of them are voting against their interests. They're biting off their nose despite their face.
Their economic and health interests for other things, the irrational interests. We talked about Margaret Chase Smith talking about racism and
yeah, people who buy into racism are hitting themselves in the head with a hammer.
Yeah, but it's an old story. I mean,
it is an old story. And the only way to overcome it is to out-organize them.
Yeah, yeah. When you talk about the Civil War, most of the people who fought for the Civil War didn't own slaves. They were the poor people. They were the cannon fodder. What's his name that wrote the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? The same thing. We're still seeing that kind of nonsense
Thomas
in Kansas.
Frank. Right.
Thomas Frank, yeah. This week, the governor of Kansas wanted to ban a huge public outings, and the religious right there came out and they got the legislature to overrule her and say, we're going to have big services for Easter and things like that. So she came out with a counter saying, that's fine, but I'm going to, it's not fine, but it's going to happen. I'm going to authorize the state police to take the license plates of people who attend these large gatherings, and we're going to track these people as to whether or not they're spreading the virus because it's starting to spread to these red states.
And in fact, that is how it spread, right? I mean, the first spread in New York State was because of some guy who went to a religious ceremony, and he was infected.
Yeah, that's it. And there's still down in Florida, the governor down there can't seem to get it right, and he's going to exempt religious services from these gatherings. Down in Louisiana,
that guy, he also believes that nobody under 25 has ever gotten this thing.
Right, right.
He made that in a public speech. Nobody under 25 has gotten sick with the coronavirus.
Yep. The more things change, the more they stay the same. These battles that keep coming up, and they've existed for so long.
What's coming up next week?
Well, Lexington and Concord. We have Easter on this Sunday, and it's going to be very different Easter for people and families and whatever. We wish our listeners a happy Easter. And we have the Lexington Concord battle that started on the 19th. And who knows what else is going to pop up.
Well, we'll be here to see it. But right now we're done.
We're done. Well, I guess we'll see you next week. Take
care.
See
you next week.
Stay safe. Wear masks.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps. members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.